Hey guys, this is OVW Superstar Dimes, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Life Radio. I'm your host this week, Micah Sen, here with my wife, Riley Sen. Say hi, Riley.
Hello.
Also, we're joined by our dog, Samson. He's sitting here very quietly. Something just fell. That was my Hangman Adam Page figure. Pay no attention to that. We're going to open up this week of AEW Dynamite reviews with this day in wrestling history. And something pretty big happened today. Exactly 1 year ago today, WWE did their mass pandemic release. And actually, hold on, let me check the news site. Oh, breaking news, actually. WWE had another release. April 15th, 2021, WWE released, what is this, like 10 people? And some of these are shocking. Some of them not so much. Bo Dallas, he hasn't been on WWE programming since 2019, okay? I get it. Wesley Blake, one of the Forgotten Sons. For some reason, Jackson Ryker's still there. Mojo Rawley, I guess now that they don't have, what's his name, the Patriots dude.
The football
Yeah,
guy.
the football guy anymore. They don't need Mojo Rawley. He hasn't been on since June 15th of 2020. Kalisto has been released. Tucker, which, come on, guys. I can't believe you fell under Tucker notice so poorly. I'm sure he'll do great. I think he would do great in New Japan, actually. I think he would be a really, really big asset there. Chelsea Green, which is the wife of Zack Ryder, now Matt Cardona.
Wait, who's Tucker?
Tucker noticed.
Tucky?
Tucky!
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking, but I mean, they literally haven't had anything for him to do after they split up Tucker and Otis. They were
Sorry,
such a good
guys.
tag team.
Sorry, I only know him as Tuckett,
Yeah, his name is Tucky,
so.
actually. Chelsea Green, wife or girlfriend of Matt Cardona, she's kind of had a bad go of it because she's re-debuted twice and been injured in both the debuts. So, I mean, maybe because she's injury prone, I guess, is why they're releasing her and they can't really stick around. Mickie James, future Hall of Famer, Mickie James was released. They can't find anything to do with her. They have 3 hours of Raw a week. They don't feature the women hardly at all. And they couldn't find anything to do with a legend who still can go. That boggles my mind. The three that really surprised me and honestly make me upset, the Iconics, Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, were both released. Peyton Royce is the wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure, of Shawn Spears. Billy Kay, obviously was just in WrestleMania. It boggles my mind that they would bring in these such charismatic people and that did such good stuff together, split them up saying they're never going to tag again, and then decide, you know what, this didn't work, let's just release them. It blows my mind. They literally don't have, I don't, they have one women's tag team that I can think that's actually a tag team. That's the Riot Squad. That's it. They have a women's tag team belt, one tag team, and they decide, let's split up this tag team and let's just release them. They're going to be such a huge asset wherever they go. Billy Kay released a statement that sounded a lot like a retirement. I hope that's not the case. I would love to see them in AEW, to be honest with you. I think they would be a great addition because, like I've said before, they're not really lacking quality wrestlers in the AEW women's division. They're lacking characters, and I think they would be great in that role. And in my opinion, the biggest release, Samoa Joe. I mean, he is one of the best still doing it today. I know he's been in the commentary role for a while. He's done a great job in that role. They just changed Raw's commentary booth to remove him and add some guy from some other sport I've never heard of. I didn't super enjoy him the little bit I watched. But yeah, Samoa Joe has been released. Obviously, he's injury prone, right? And I think this is probably a business decision more than anything because I'm sure he was getting paid big money and he wasn't actually able to wrestle because of his injuries. So on one hand, I kind of get it, but man, he's not somebody I would let loose. He's got so much potential. He's one of the best promos in the business. I love Samoa Joe. Hopefully, he gets healed up here soon and able to get back in the ring. And maybe we see Samoa Joe on Team Taz, or Samoa Joe versus Team Taz, or honestly, just Samoa Joe versus everybody. I think he's still got something left in the tank for sure, and keep himself healthy. And I'd like to see him somewhere else very soon. He's got the 90-day non-compete clause, I assume. But yeah, kind of baffling they would do this, especially 1 year to the day. Extremely bad taste, in my opinion. I guess it's the after Mania thing. I don't know. But yeah, people are again angry at WWE. They'll probably forget by like next pay-per-view. And they'll just continue making more money than they've ever made, but firing people for budget cuts. I don't get it. But here we are, not reviewing WWE, because I don't like that product, but I do like AEW. So we're here to review AEW Dynamite. We start off with the tag team champions, the Young Bucks. They cut a promo there I thought was pretty good, and they've kind of cemented themselves as, hey, we are heels now, which is exactly what I said last week we needed. I didn't want wishy-washy Matt Jackson being emotional in the ring, not knowing, is it going to be good, is it going to be bad? I wanted them to be decisive in who they're going to be, and it appears as if they've done so. They're saying they're going to make a newer, better version of themselves, and we see their old, like, flamboyant, bright-colored gear getting cut up. So, yeah, we've got heel bucks, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the match. We then have a backstage segment with Mike Tyson and MJF. Basically, MJF is trying to talk up Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson's not having any of it. He takes MJF's check that he writes him, tears it up, puts it in his mouth, and spits it back at MJF. I mean, everybody wants to spit on MJF. He's a terrible person. Then we have the opener for the night for the AEW World Tag Team titles, the Young Bucks versus Rey Fénix and Pac. Now, Riley, you're obviously a huge Young Bucks fan. I am really, really big on this match. Maybe not as much as some people. Some people are thinking it's match of the year. I don't think so. It was a decent match. But I'm loving the character work from the Young Bucks. How did you feel about this?
I loved all of this match. First of all, from like the get-go, them coming out in new gear, it was very, very monotone. Like just
Silver and white.
Silver, yeah. And it wasn't even like super shiny silver. It was like very flat gray, like light gray. And they always tell such a great story. They always do. There was one point in the match where he was going to the side or the corner that they usually are in. The face corner. And he was like putting his hand up for the tag. And then he realized, wait, this isn't my corner anymore. And it was just, I would have never thought to do something like that. But everything in this match was good. Obviously, Rey Fénix is amazing. And Pac is amazing. I loved the work outside of the ring, like with the, I don't know, the moves that they did. But they did them synchronized. It was
Poison
so
Rana,
good.
I think.
Maybe. But it was a really good match.
Yeah, I think the best thing in this match was Matt Jackson specifically his heel work.
Oh, and whenever he did, he like mocked his old self.
Yeah.
In the middle of the ring, like did all these exaggerated movements. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and there was one point when he had taken out Rey Fénix, and I think Pac was in the ring, and he got on the turnbuckle and was like trying to get the hot tag from Pac. Like, ooh, tag me in, come on, I got it. And then he tagged himself in, jumped in the ring, like powered up. And then just, like, immediately got his comeuppance from Pac. I really like the heel bucks. I think this is a better suit for them than being faces. And I think it really rejuvenates them for AEW and rejuvenates this tag team title picture.
And another thing, whenever he was in the ring, Matt Jackson, he, like, got on his knees and he was, like, humbling himself in the ring. He pointed up to the sky and then he pretended to cry and wipe a tear from his eye.
Yeah, he was pulling some real Shawn Michaels inspiration, like falling to his knees, crying, pointing up. It was really good. There was one spot when he did, like, a couple backflips into the corner trying to, like, set up for the, like, I don't know, like a heel kick, I guess. And he, like, does all these backflips, all this extravagant stuff. He gets over the corner and he just does a back rake. It was so good.
And Nick Jackson, even, was really funny in this match. Like, at the very end.
Yes, I loved it.
To end it all. And he... I don't know if you want to talk about the ending.
Yeah, to end the match, Nick Jackson rips off in one fell swoop the mask of Rey Fénix. And it was so smooth. Like, you did, like... It was like he wasn't even like he, 1 second he's wearing a mask, the next second he's gone. It's gone. Like you could barely even see it. It was like sleight of hand, And then they set him up for a double super kick. He's obviously covering his face the entire time because, you know, he's a luchador. Excalibur again points out how in Mexico that would be a disqualification, but not here in AEW. And then after the pin, Nick Jackson looks straight at the camera and he makes the motion for ripping the mask off. And then is like, points to the camera like, did you see that? Did you see that? It was good, right? It was, I loved
it. He points to his
yeah, he points to his forehead like, yeah, that was smart.
It's like, yeah, smart, see?
Yeah, I think this was a very good match. Not match of the year contender by any means, but I think it was a very solid match. Obviously, Rey Fénix and Pac are fantastic high flyers. The Young Bucks did some really good character work. I thought it was a very good match. We then had a backstage segment. I'm actually thinking during this match, okay, AEW here lately has kind of been stagnating on me a little bit. And I'm thinking, why is that? This match was really good, but I'm just really not feeling connected. Oh, you know why? Because I don't know what's happening with Hangman Adam Page. You know, Hangman is kind of hanging around the Dark Order. I want to see the Hangman story have some development. AEW, to me, has been so successful, in my opinion, because of their great long-term storytelling. And I think Hangman Adam Page is the premier story of AEW throughout the entire arc. And we get a backstage segment with Alex Marvez talking to the now number one contender, Hangman Adam Page. They're joined with the entire Dark Order. And Alex Marvez says, all right, Hangman, we've got to talk about it. How are you going to deal with Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers? You're now the number one contender. How are you going to go forward? And Hangman says, well, I'm glad you asked, but, you know, John Silver here, his shoulder is getting better. He's pretty lucky. He should be back in about 4 to 6 weeks. But yeah, you know what? I gotta go. I actually got something I gotta do. And Marvez is like, well, that wasn't my question. And then Reynolds was like, oh, you want to see John Silver do some rehab? And he like just takes his arm and like slowly lifts it up. Everybody's cheering him on. It was a really cool segment. And yeah, it does point out Hangman's gotta do something soon. That's been my theory. I thought Hangman might lose a match here recently just so they would prolong the Kenny Hangman story. I think what I would like to see is Hangman actually challenge Darby Allin. He did have that open challenge to all of the Dark Order. Hangman, not officially in the Dark Order, but I think it would be great is if he came out and was like, you know what, you called out the Dark Order. I like to consider them some of my best friends, and I would like a shot at that TNT title. I think that would be really good to kind of prolong him and Kenny a little bit. I think Double or Nothing should probably be Kenny versus Pac if I had to fantasy book it. And then maybe All Out or Full Gear, have Hangman win it from Kenny. I think Kenny should have a long reign, though. But Hangman should definitely take it off of him. Maybe after a loss. Maybe he loses at one pay-per-view and wins it pay-per-view or two later. Maybe that's what happens. But yeah. I'm glad they kind of acknowledged we have to do something with Hangman Adam Page. We then have a backstage segment with Alex Marvez with the Inner Circle and Mike Tyson. Chris Jericho basically says that him and Mike Tyson were once rivals, but after getting beat up by the Pinnacle, he wanted to make an apology to everyone he had wronged. So now Mike Tyson's his friend. He's going to be fair in the upcoming match, yada, yada, yada. It was okay. It was all right. Mike Tyson's there. I've given my opinion of that. I don't need to run that in the ground. We then had Red Velvet versus Jade Cargill. I thought this match was really good, and honestly, I am super impressed by Red Velvet. Every time I see her, I think she is improved and really proved herself to be a valuable part of this women's division. And also Jade Cargill, she plays her role fantastically. This is like her fourth wrestling match. Really, really good. I love her finisher and the way that she pins after her finisher. She got the whole combination. I think it looks really good. What did you think about the match, Riley?
I really like this match, and I think both of these people, I think they bring something to the women's division. They bring that, like we were talking about earlier, that character. Yeah. I mean, Red Velvet came out. She was so charismatic. I mean,
she's got the velvet apron, which is so cool.
Yeah, her song, her little thing with like stirring it up.
I think it was
new
music.
It did sound new, yeah. And then Jade Cargill, oh my gosh. Like, they are both just fantastic. And I'm really excited to see what they do with these two. And I enjoyed the match. It was a really good women's match.
Yeah. I would love to see Jade Cargill versus Bianca Belair. Like, even if it wasn't a wrestling match, like a weightlifting competition or something.
Well, yeah, that's what I was telling you the other day. I was like, I mean, they are so strong. Like, I just want to see them matched up. And I also want to see how much they lift comparatively.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to see.
I know I wasn't on the WrestleMania review show, but I will definitely say Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks was the match of the weekend.
Oh, yes.
Like, by far, in my opinion. I know Matt said that he enjoyed the triple threat, which was a decent match. But Bianca Belair versus Sasha was for sure match of the weekend. I loved everything about that match. And Bianca Belair is a superstar. But speaking of female superstars, we then have Tony Schiavone. Oh, by the way, Jade Cargill won with the Jaded. And then she did her cool pin. So, yeah, obviously, Jade Cargill's going to win, right? She's not going to lose for a long time. Tony Schiavone's then backstage with Britt Baker and Rebel Reba. Britt Baker's got like a printout of the AEW rankings, and she starts praising the ranking, saying that, you know, she's now number three. Red Velvet just lost. Ty Conti will be facing Shida soon, and after that, she's coming for that title. She will be the number one contender after all this goes down. And she says, you know, this is such a good ranking system, blah blah blah. It's funny, just a little while ago she was bashing the ranking system, saying how dumb it was and how it should be different. But now that it works in her favor, she's praising it. I think that's really good heel work. And she's also saying that she'll be on Dark Elevation on Monday, which she's been promoting Elevation a lot. I think she's kind of the character to go to. And honestly, if I'm going to watch it for somebody, I think Britt Baker would be the one, because she's not someone who gets featured a lot on Dynamite. And I really like watching her wrestle nowadays. She's doing really good. We then had The Factory come out with Anthony Ogogo versus Cole Carter, which is a local talent. And Anthony Ogogo comes out. He's got a great theme song. He's got a great look. His entrance attire is not going to fly, I can tell you right now, because the Olympic Committee is one of the most hardcore copyright infringement, lawyering up, going to sue your pants off organizations. And his pants literally have the Olympic rings on them. It's really cool. It spells out Ogogo. It's a great design, but it is not going to fly. And the reason I say that, if you remember, Kurt Angle's Olympic Slam was his finisher. They sued the WWE over that, saying that they could not call it the Olympic Slam because they trademarked the word Olympic. So, yeah, they're very, what is the word?
They're sticklers.
Yeah, they're sticklers. Legalistic. And they're going to be coming for Anthony Ogogo. Hopefully not, but I'm pretty sure that's not going to fly. I really like it, though. It's a cool design. Obviously, Anthony Ogogo goes over local jobber.
Anthony Ogogo goes over.
Yeah, I like how I did that. I didn't think this was good. He did a kidney punch on Cole Carter, and the ref called for the bell because he couldn't continue. I thought that was stupid. He should have punched him and then, I don't know, made him pass out, put him down for the three count. It looked really dumb for him to punch somebody in the stomach and the ref called for the bell because he couldn't continue.
And also, how did he tell him he couldn't continue? Like, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, he obviously did not say, I can't continue. He just was on the ground writhing in pain, which, I don't know, it's a wrestling match. That happens a lot. Our dogs are barking. Don't worry about that. I don't get it. I didn't like this. I think Anthony Ogogo looked great. I think The Factory looked really good. You had QT Soprano over there in his bowling shirt, which was a really cool look. He looks like a mob boss. But yeah, I think that ending was stupid, and I hope that's not how he ends his matches. He needs to actually count to the three like a wrestler, or choke him out or something. I don't know. It's kind of dumb.
Also, whenever they came out and Excalibur said that thing about, oh, it's The Factory, I was like, okay, that makes sense now. But whenever they threw that blue paint up, you know, on the wall,
yeah,
I was like, what the heck does that mean? So now I get it. He was trying to
cover up Nightmare, cover but up it kind Nightmare. Of botched a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. We then had Chris Jericho versus Dax Harwood with Mike Tyson as the special guest enforcer. Now, I think this was a pretty solid match, but I have one major problem on it. All right, so let's say you're in a wrestling match, and Mike Tyson is the special guest enforcer, and anyone who gets involved or tries to interfere is going to get decked by Mike Tyson. You would surely think no one is going to interfere in this match if you're going to get decked by Mike Tyson. This match had, like, literally 10 people interfere, it seemed like. It was ridiculous. It is noted that there were no post-match brawls this week on AEW, which is like the first time in 20 weeks that's happened. Someone did the math. I saw it on the Squared Circle. It's been a long time since that happened. What we did have is a lot of in-match brawls, which are not better. Actually, they're worse. I don't like that at all. The only two people allowed at ringside were Cash Wheeler and Sammy Guevara. And if anybody else got involved, Mike Tyson was supposed to take them out. The entire Pinnacle comes out at one point. The entire Inner Circle comes out at one point. Sammy Guevara interferes a few times. Mike Tyson does nothing. Cash Wheeler did interfere at one point, and Mike Tyson knocked him out. It looked great. I think it actually was a worked punch after looking at it. It sounded and looked really good. Maybe Tyson's been working on that, because I feel like somebody who's a real fighter like that, who actually knocks people out, it's got to be hard to pull your punch there at the end. But actually looking at it, I think he like slapped his bicep or something and made that sound. It looked really good. It looks like Cash Wheeler's going to be out for weeks and weeks. So that was decent. But all these interferences, all these distractions, come on. Jericho wins with a Judas Effect after a distraction by Mike Tyson. Because, I don't know if you know this, they have a little after-match promo by Jericho, and they announced the newest member of the Inner Circle is Mike Tyson. So yeah, we're going full NWO. We're just adding everybody. And Mike Tyson is now in the Inner Circle. How do you feel about that?
I don't think it's legit. Like
they made a post on Facebook and everything.
He's, I know, but he said, what did he say? Ancillary or something? I don't know what that means. Somebody Google it for me. But
I think ancillary means additional.
Oh well,
we have the technology.
We're Googling it. Oh, so just a support person. It's not like it's not like a rep. But anyways, the whole match, to me, I liked it. I didn't really see what you saw in it with the whole, like, not interfering because Mike Tyson's a special guest enforcer. The one thing I didn't like about it was whenever everybody came out in the back.
Yeah, that's my main problem.
That was the only thing that I didn't like. And, I mean, Mike Tyson can't be everywhere at once, so.
Anybody can, it'd be Mike Tyson.
Maybe so. You can throw them punches.
We then had an out back segment with Marvez trying to talk to Kenny Omega and the entire fake Bullet Club outside of Daly's place. Don Callis takes the mic, kicks Marvez out. It was really funny. I forget exactly what Luke Gallows said, but it was something dirty as he does, but it actually kind of popped me a little bit. But yeah, Don Callis basically says if they've learned anything, they've learned that you don't know what to expect.
He said Alex Marvez had a little dingly, I think.
Yeah, he said
dangly.
That's why you don't have any danglies or something.
He said something about a dangly. I was like, okay, thanks.
Don Callis said you never know what to expect with the Young Bucks. He said it's not the end of the story, it's just the beginning. Kenny Omega takes the mic. He says they haven't changed. They're just sick of doing what they're supposed to do, which I think is a nod to the DX theme song, which used to close out every BTE. Obviously, the Young Bucks are taking serious Shawn Michaels vibes here. They've got the long cross earrings. They've got the backwards leather newsy caps, whatever they're called. Full-on 1990s Shawn Michaels. They're like combining two eras. I think it looks great for some heel heat. But yeah, they're saying from here on out, they want all the gold. And it's not just fun and games anymore. They're going to put on, or they said they put on the match of the year earlier tonight, and the entire tag division is being put on notice. Anyone who wants to come at them has a BTE trigger with their name on it. And Don Callis finishes the segment saying they should be ready to be surprised. The Young Bucks fake a kick to the cameraman, saying they're just kidding, but Don Callis actually ends up super kicking the cameraman, which I thought was funny. I thought it was really funny because Don Callis is an old man, so I don't know.
This whole thing was really great, and one thing I want to point out, one of the Good Brothers, not the tall one, that's gross.
Carl Anderson.
Carl Anderson, he...
The
he
less kept, slimy one.
They all kind of were saying this, but I heard Carl Anderson saying the most, but he was like, after everybody talked, he would be like, oh, that was a good promo. Oh, yeah, that was such a good promo. Like, just really working it up. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is great. This is fantastic.
I also like the visual that they're outside the arena because it almost makes it look like they're not even welcome in the locker room. So I think that's a good little tidbit. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but you see Jericho and Inner Circle backstage getting interviewed. You see Mike Tyson getting interviewed backstage, and the Young Bucks and Kenny are outside the stadium, so trying to get out of there as quick as possible. We then had a video package hyping up Thunder Rosa, saying she's going to take over the world. She wants both the NWA and the AEW Women's Championship, and I believe her. She could probably do it. She said she's going to take that belt off of Serena Deeb as soon as she's able to get back, and I hope she's able to get back soon because I really do miss her. She's probably, in my opinion, the best wrestler in the women's division. I know that could be kind of out there, but she's fantastic. But speaking of great wrestlers in the women's division, yes, we have Chris Statlander returning versus Amber Nova. Chris Statlander actually came out to, what is the name of the song? Jane? No, not Jane.
It's whatever Orange Cassidy's song is.
Jane is his old theme song. It's Orange Cassidy's new theme song. It's a real song. I don't know it. But she actually came on Orange Cassidy's theme song instead of her own old theme song. I'm hoping this doesn't mean the Best Friends are going to come out to this song, because the Best Friends theme is one of the best themes of all time. I love it. But yeah, so she's got her own Titantron. She's got a whole new look, new gear. I think she looks better than ever. I love the like quarter face paint thing she's doing. I think her new gear looks great. Obviously, she's been working really hard to come back from her injury, and she looks better than she left, in my opinion. And she did a really good job with this match. She did her finisher, which is the Supernova, I believe, which is funny because Amber Nova is her opponent. It's like a modified pile driver. It looks like it just kills people, and she came up with the win. And I'm really glad to have Chris Statlander back. I think she's really good.
For some reason, I thought it was like the Big Bang or something.
It was called the Big Bang. I think they called it the Supernova this time, though. I don't know if they changed it.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was just for that match because Amber Nova?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe it was just Excalibur playing with everybody.
Yeah.
Backstage, we then have Dasha interviewing Team Taz. And she asked Taz if Christian has answered his invite. Ricky Starks butts in. Basically says they shouldn't even be waiting for an answer. He should be answering them quickly. Taz butts in. Then Brian Cage gets in where and he's like, Taz is like, you know what? You know, no. You guys need to stay back here. Obviously, you're too high. You're getting all up in your feelings. It's just gonna be me and Hobbs and Hook, and we're gonna go out there and we're gonna talk to Christian, and you guys just need to stay back. Brian Cage and Ricky Starks, you know, kind of scoff. And they head off to talk to Christian. Because guess what? Christian is getting interviewed in the ring with Tony Schiavone. Wouldn't you know it, Taz is going to interrupt him. Christian says it is a huge thrill for him to talk with Tony, as they've never done this before, because Christian was not a WCW guy. And Christian says he has an open contract from Tony Khan, and is immediately interrupted by Team Taz, or part of Team Taz. And Taz says he doesn't appreciate getting blown off by Christian, ask him if he's in or out. And Christian says, well, I was going to answer you in the back in private like a professional, but, you know, since you're out here interrupting me, I'll be honest, you said it yourself, Team Taz is a bit of a dumpster fire. And I didn't come to AEW to help you. I came here to win championships, so my answer is no. He also made a joke about Taz's height, which is funny still. I mean, it happened his entire career, but it's still funny. Taz says he never liked Christian anyways. And says, you've always had your buddy to come carry you throughout your career, but you don't have him anymore. Taz keeps talking, and Hobbs walks to the ring. Hobbs just lays into Christian. Christian sold Hobbs like $1 million, which I think is great. And Hobbs just throws him around, throws him in the barricade, throws him head first in the steps. He grinds his foot onto Christian's head on the outside steps with the diamond plating. I guess we're getting Will Hobbs versus Christian Cage next week, and hopefully we get Christian Cage versus Ricky Starks, Christian Cage versus Brian Cage in a cage match. I think all of these things would be great. I'm really looking forward to see Christian in action against Will Hobbs. Just imagine if you're Will Hobbs, say, 2 years ago, you're told, hey, you're going to have a match on national television in front of over 1 million people against Christian. a guy who hasn't wrestled at that point would be 5 years. And Will Hobbs, who's working the indies, that's got to be crazy to look back. This guy who was just hired not too long ago and is now wrestling Christian on Dynamite. That's really cool. And I like Christian. Riley, you never really had any exposure to Christian, but how do you feel about him so far in AEW?
I like him so far. I just wish that they would do more with him. Like, I just... He doesn't have very many segments, and whenever he does have them, it gets interrupted.
That's just...
I mean...
I was waiting for him to be like, Taz, I'm not staying. You can't just come out here and interrupt me every week. I want somebody to make that shot.
Yeah, but... I mean, I like him so far. I mean, I liked his match with Frankie Kazarian, and I'm looking forward to more stuff. So they are keeping me on the hook.
Yeah, I think his time is for sure coming. They're going to be leading up to Kenny versus Christian at some point. I don't know if it'll be a big Dynamite or on a pay-per-view. Honestly, they may just save that for a pay-per-view. Maybe that's the Double or Nothing main event. But speaking of main events, we have Darby Allin versus Matt Hardy. Darby Hardy in the main event in a Falls Count Anywhere match. What did you think about this match?
I actually really enjoyed this match. And honestly, I didn't think I was going to, mainly because of Matt Hardy. And it's not because I don't like Matt Hardy, because I do like him. I'm just not like super into his in-ring work for some reason.
His best in-ring days are behind him.
Yeah. But, I mean, he really put on, like, a really good, really good work, I think, in this match with Darby Allin and beat the crap out of him. And, obviously, Darby is always going to take a bunch of crap and then still come out on top. But I really liked this match.
Yeah. I thought the match was really good. I thought the interferences, as earlier, were unnecessary. Obviously, it's a Falls Count Anywhere match. Matt Hardy came out alone saying he wanted to do this on his own. But, of course, the entire Hardy family office got involved.
Yeah, didn't like that. And also, didn't the Dark Order come out?
Yeah, so I didn't
like
that.
Which I thought was really weird because they have no connection, that, to my knowledge.
Well, Darby Allin had that match against John Silver, and he kind of gave respect to Brody Lee. I guess I can see that. But what I didn't like is the fact that Darby Allin came out here alone against Matt Hardy, which is fine. But as soon as shenanigans started happening, the light should have come cut off. It's a recorded show. They could just black out the screen. And Sting should have appeared. You have Sting as this guy's manager, and you didn't utilize Sting as I thought you should have. Because the Dark Order runs out, and then Sting comes like hobbling behind them, looking like an old man. I didn't think this was properly utilizing Sting at all. They should have made him look great and have him alone run out the entire... Maybe just the Butcher and the Blade or something, and then have Private Party come out separately and try to, like, jump him. But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't love that.
And also, like, the camera cuts.
Yeah, they were cutting away from the match way too much.
Because there were so many things going on at one time that the camera just kept cutting to all these different things, and you couldn't... That was also another annoying thing. The match was so good, it should have just been the match,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think the match would have stood on its own a lot better without all the camera cuts, without all the interferences. It was very overbooked, and a lot of people said they came off pretty well to them, but I've got to nitpick it. I didn't care for it. I thought the match was very good. The camera cuts were bad. The interruptions were bad. I get having an interruption, but they should have handled it better with Sting carrying off the Hardy family office. And if you want to have the Dark Order get involved, that's cool too. They should have had, like, maybe Sting runs off the maybe he runs off Private Party and then the Butcher jumps him. Okay, I can get that. I can get behind that. And then the entire Dark Order comes out and saves Sting, because on BTE they've been trying to recruit Sting, and obviously they've got this small connection with Darby. That would have been okay, but I don't know. I guess they're just trying to build the Dark Order as the true babyface faction of AEW, which is good. They should be doing that because they're behind Adam Page, who is the top babyface in AEW for me. And yeah, I think this was a really good match, just kind of plagued with some overbooking. Kind of the whole consensus of the show, really. I think it was a really good show, plagued with a little bit of overbooking. But yeah, we need to talk about the ending of the match, which there's two big spots of the match. And both of them involve jumping off of things. Darby Allin gets set up on a table by Matt Hardy. He does a leg drop off of a ladder, which I haven't seen him do in a while. Remind me to show you after this. The reason Matt Hardy walks like he does is he did a leg drop off the top of a cage onto Edge. And jeez, it messed up his spine and his hips and everything. And they were never good to begin with. But yeah, he actually says that one move shortened his career by several years for sure. But yeah, he actually did a leg drop off of a ladder onto a table onto Darby Allin, which is really cool to see him be able to still do. Hopefully it didn't hurt him. But to finish the match, Darby Allin clears off the announce table, which has never been done before, actually. He like breaks the monitors with Sting's bat, which I thought was really cool visual. And he sets up Matt Hardy on the table, climbs up the scaffolding there next to the announce table. He broke Tony Schiavone's like headphones throughout all of this, apparently. He does a coffin drop from the scaffolding onto the announce table through Matt Hardy. And he just kind of lays on top of Matt Hardy for the three count, which I thought was a great way to end it because both men are spent. And I think this is probably the best, easily the best match Matt Hardy's had coming back into AEW. I think this is a lot of what they wanted Sammy Guevara versus Matt Hardy to be. And maybe that's why they booked this match, kind of to redeem Matt Hardy. That match wasn't his fault for going poorly, Sammy Guevara versus Matt Hardy, unless it was his choice to use one table, but I don't feel like it was uniquely his fault. But he did redeem himself with this match because he put on a great show. This actually was recorded 3 days after his father passed away as well, which he put out there that he wanted to work hard in this match because that's what his dad always did, and his dad always believed in him, which I thought was really cool. So glad to see him put on a great match, and good to know he can still do it. I could have done without all the overbooking, though. But yeah, Darby Allin did retain after a coffin drop from the scaffolding. I mean, doesn't make Matt Hardy look weak at all. Makes Darby Allin look crazy as ever. So yeah, great way to end it. And I think it was a good way to end the show. And yeah, what would you think about grading this week, Riley?
I think I'm going to grade it an A.
An A, okay.
Because obviously it was very Young Bucks and Kenny Omega heavy. Mm-hmm. Throughout, Chris Statlander's back. Oh, I'm so excited about that. She's great. And the Darby Allin and Matt Hardy match was really good, besides, you know, the other stuff. So, I mean, I had a really good feel after the show, so I'm going to say an A.
Yeah, just like earlier, the Jericho-Dax Harwood match, I think it was a really good match. I think it's some of the best work Chris Jericho's done in a while.
Oh, yeah.
But the overbooking of it was kind of annoying. Tony Khan, a huge WCW fan, though, so that's what you get. I think if I were to rate this episode, I'd probably give it a B+. A high B+, almost an A-. Maybe an A-. I think I'm going to give it an A-, because there was some really good in-ring work done.
And Chris Statlander's back, Mike.
Chris Statlander's back. Okay, I'll give it the bump up just for that. Yeah, A-. There was really good in-ring work, really good promo work, just some booking decisions, overbooked a little bit. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good episode, and I'm not going to crap on it because, you know, I enjoyed it, so what more can I ask for than to enjoy my wrestling for the week? We watched Raw the other night. Enjoy that.
Oh my gosh. At all. It makes me love AEW so much more and appreciate it so much more whenever I watch WWE product, which, I mean, NXT is good, but like, other than that, it's like...
Yeah, also worth talking about here, I think, NXT has now moved to Tuesday nights, and they had a very good rating for them, 800,000 viewers with a pretty high demo comparatively. And AEW, this is their first unopposed show. Well, they've had unopposed shows before, but this is their first unopposed show of the new schedule.
With a pretty stacked card, though, too.
Pretty stacked card. And they had 1.2 million viewers, the highest they've had since their debut episode, which is really cool.
I'm just saying, they'll probably have more next Wednesday because of the WWE releases today.
Yeah.
Because I've seen several people on my Facebook say, okay, I'm officially joining AEW. Like, I'm going to be on their bandwagon now because they're legit mad. So
they've definitely got the advantage of looking like the good guy company. And I hope nothing changes that. They did just release Ivelisse, which, in my opinion, just strengthens their image of being the good guy company, because Ivelisse has been known to be kind of a trash person. I mean, I hate to say it, but she's everywhere she's been, she's had a bad rap. She was released by AEW. She's blaming it on everybody but herself. We all talked about Ivelisse versus Thunder Rosa when she was no-selling it. She blamed that whole thing on Thunder Rosa, saying that, well, I was the veteran, so she should have showed me respect, blah, blah, blah. No, she just doesn't seem like a good person. She really doesn't. And I'm glad to see her gone. I hate to say it, but I am. I hope Diamante does well without her. I think that this, honestly, is probably for the best for Diamante. And I think they had a match, or they have a match upcoming, Diamante versus Thunder Rosa on Elevation. Was that this week?
I'm not sure. I know that they were teasing it, though.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch that if it did already happen. I think it was this Monday. But yeah, AEW definitely benefits from the image of the good guy company. WWE for years has tried to paint themselves as the bad guy. I mean, starting out with the Attitude Era, Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon. And it worked great for them in the early 2000s. But I think nowadays they need to paint themselves a little bit differently. Because I think nowadays people support companies they feel are good. You know, you're not going to, if you have a choice between two shampoos and you know that one tested on dogs and one doesn't, you're going to choose the one that doesn't test it on dogs because you don't want to hurt puppies. But WWE hurts puppies. So you heard it here first, folks. Don't support WWE. They hurt puppies. But that has been our show of the week, episode 167, Wrestle Life Radio. You can follow us all on Wrestle Life Radio on Facebook, Wrestle Life Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to check out Indie Focus, I believe, on Tuesday. We had a great couple shows for WrestleMania. Really enjoyed listening to the review show as I wasn't on it. Really good content. If you haven't listened, go listen back to that. But yeah, thanks for joining us this week, and I hope you have an absolutely great week. Stealing Matt's tagline.
AEW, AEW, AEW.
Samoa Joe's coming.